to Condo Craze and HOAs here on 850 WFTL. I'm Karen Curtis, and I'm here again today, as we are each Sunday at noon, with attorneys Eric Glazer, Scott Shapiro from Glazer & Associates PA, a law firm practicing community association law throughout Florida. As our listeners know, we're here each week to answer all of your calls and emails about the issues that make life in your condominium or HOA absolutely crazy from one minute to the next. As always, we would love to get the phone lines going early, answering all of your condominium and HOA questions. So give us a call right here in our studio at 877-850-8585. Again, that's 877-850-8585. Or if you prefer to email us your questions, you can do so by visiting the show's website at condocrazeandhoas.com and by clicking on the Email the Show tab.
And of course, even if you don't want to send us an email, you should still visit the show's website at condocrazeandhoas.com, where you can listen to all of our past shows, sign up for our free seminars, and see who the show's sponsors are, and visit all of their websites as well.
And by the way, if you have a product or service that would be beneficial to our listeners and want to be a guest on the show, attend our monthly seminars where you'll meet hundreds of different associations, be listed on the show's website, and have a commercial spot during each week's show. You can become a sponsor of the show. Just visit the show's website at Condo Craze and HOAs and send us a quick email.
And, of course, if you'd like to call our law firm, Glazer & Associates, directly and pick our brains off the air, you can call us at 877-4-CONDO-CRAZE. And you can visit the law firm's website at condo-laws.com. Again, that's condo-laws.com.
Well, last show we spoke about all of the controversy surrounding emotional support animals. Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Whether they're for real or just an excuse for owners to keep their pets in no-pet communities, whether owners want to keep their pets in the no-pet community or not, if there's fraud built into the system, how associations are starting to fight these emotional support claims. And we even spoke about one judge who was too emotional herself to kick Spot out of a condo because she was too emotional.
Well, great show last week, Karen, and we did run out of time, and I just want to briefly finish up where we left off real quick before we bring on our special guest, Julio Robina. But first, I just want to wish my wife, Mikkel, of 20 years, a happy Mother's Day, and my mom, Bernice, of 43 years, a happy Mother's Day.
Wow.
And, of course, you, Karen, my partner in crime for 1 year, a happy Mother's
Day.
Thank
you.
And, of course, to all of our listeners, a very happy and healthy Mother's Day to all of you out there. Okay, Scott, now bring us back to the emotional support animal debate.
Well, first, I want to say hi, Mom. Happy Mother's Day.
Very nice of you.
All right.
What
well,
a son.
You know, well, here's what's so ironic about this whole emotional support animal debate. We just lost that Cone case we've been talking about that was before the Florida Supreme Court because the court stated that the right to contract here in Florida is basically absolute. And it said that the declaration of a condominium is a contract that can't be changed absent consent of the owners. Yet with emotional support animals, despite the fact that a declaration of condominium contains an absolute restriction against pets, that contract is meaningless and pets are apparently allowed because a new interpretation of a law says so.
Right. So much for your contract, which is the declaration. But if you want to hear crazy, I'll give you crazy. Think about this for a minute. Let's say that in a 55 and over community, there are no kids allowed and no pets allowed. However, a unit owner comes forward and they say they have some emotional condition and they state that they now need companionship to provide some emotional support. Well, believe it or not, under the law, an emotional support animal would be allowed to live in the condominium, but that person's grandchild still wouldn't be because under these insane rules, dogs can provide emotional support, but children cannot. That's right. The dog can stay at grandma's house, but the grandson or granddaughter got to go.
So a dog has more rights than these grandchildren do? Is that possible?
Yeah, absolutely, Karen. It is possible. And I can tell you this. Some associations we represent have simply had enough of all this, and they've instructed us to challenge these laws in court if need be, whether it be state court or federal court. These boards are tired of people coming up to them with doctor's notes saying they need a dog in a no-pet community. And especially if this is a new person, actually, that never lived in the building before, and they have a choice of simply moving into another community that allows pets. And I think it's going to get interesting. And as a matter of fact, there's already been some cases out there where the associations prevailed.
Well, there's also a few where the associations aren't doing so well. There's a case here in Broward, as a matter of fact, that has gotten some publicity. Century Village, I believe, in Pembroke Pines refused a woman's request to move in with a Chihuahua, or I believe actually the... the Chihuahua, the woman already lived there. And the county itself is now suing the condo on behalf of the woman for the condo violating purportedly her civil rights.
Yeah, well, why the county would want to take up this woman's case, I'll never know. But I'm guessing that there are more important things to do with taxpayer dollars in this economy than suing a condo for failing to allow in a Chihuahua. You know, call me crazy. But it's such, if it's such a great case and such a terrible evil has been thrown upon this woman, my guess is that there would be a bunch of lawyers licking their chops out there to take this type of case on a contingency and sue the heck out of the condo. Why the county needs to get involved, I will never know.
Well, you know, bear in mind, however, that even though an owner may be entitled to keep an emotional support animal, that doesn't mean that the animal can roam the property without following any other rules whatsoever. For example, they still have to be on a leash if the association's documents require it, the owner still has to clean up after their pet, and the pet, you know, whether it's a dog, cat, or, you know, whatever is, you know, providing emotional support, can't be a general nuisance and bark or chirp or meow in the middle of the night, keeping everybody else up in the entire building.
So an association would still be able to have an emotional support animal removed from the premises if the animal creates problems for the other owners?
Yeah, absolutely, Karen. The association would still be entitled to file an arbitration action or a court action and get that pet removed if they can prove that that pet is still a nuisance. It's not an absolute rule that you get to keep the pet. That pet still got to comply with the basic rules and regulations of the condominium. In any event, though, this is an area of law that at least I believe will be extensively litigated over the next few years.
Didn't you say one dog had a problem being on a leash? It was stressed out if it was on a leash?
Believe it or not, I send a letter to a unit owner saying, please walk your dog on a leash through the common areas, and I get back a letter from something like the ASPCA down here telling me that, sorry, the dog suffers emotionally when put on a leash, so therefore we're not going to be putting a leash. So, again, I recommended a doggy psychiatrist and doggy Prozac, but that dog is going to be on a leash. But, again, in my opinion, it's has absolutely nothing whatsoever to do with whether or not you like or hate pets. That really has nothing to do with this debate. It has everything to do, however, with whether or not you have the right to impose your pet on a no-pet community. To me, that's the question. And should we learn of any new changes to the law or any court opinions that get decided in this regard, rest assured we're going to pass them on to you, our listeners, as soon as we learn about them.
And we do have Marilyn in Miami on the line.
All right, how about we take Marilyn's call real quick? Huh? Marilyn? How about it, Marilyn? You there?
Yes, I'm sorry. I just wanted to ask, it wasn't about topic you have now.
Oh, go right ahead. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry, but if you were thinking of going to a condo or you lived in a condo, and where they have the post office, the boxes, someone is trying to jimmy it or it's broken. Do you report that to the office? And the post office and the police?
I think when tampering with a mailbox, and believe it or not, this actually happens in condominiums more than people would think. Whether or not it happens because people fight with each other in a condominium, I don't know. But, yeah, it does happen. And I think that's something that actually needs to be reported to the postal police, and they will initiate investigation if they have to. But, yeah, that's where you absolutely should start.
Oh, through the post office.
Right. You have to lodge your complaint there. There's not much the board can do for you because the board is going to tell you, to go lodge your complaint with the post office. Okay? But, yeah, that does happen. You're certainly not the first person to complain about that.
Okay. Thanks for telling me.
All right, Marilyn. Wish you luck. All right.
Okay,
let's move on to our special guest, and that is Mr. Julio Robina. And as Julio clearly indicates on his website, he is not, let me be clear, he is not the former mayor of Hialeah that is now running for Miami mayor, but he's the other Julio Robina, who is a member of the Florida House of Representatives and chair of the Select Committee on Condominium Association Governance, and who is now running for the Miami-Dade County Commission. Representative Robina was instrumental in passing a host of new legislation in 2008, and I can tell you he has always been a friend of associations and their owners. And again, Mr. Robina is now running for the Miami-Dade County Commission, and I, for one, wish him a lot of luck. How are you, Julio? And thanks for being a guest on the show today.
Well, thank you, Eric, and thank you guys for allowing me. And good afternoon, everyone. If I could, I'd like to say also a wonderful, wonderful, happy day to all the mothers, all of those moms who made us possible.
So, exactly.
Absolutely. It's great to have you on the show. Great to have you on the show again.
Thank you.
And I just want to tell our listeners real quick how you and I first came in contact with each other a few years back.
Interesting story.
Very interesting. I mentioned that you were chair of the Select Committee on Condominium Governance, and I think that was a committee, correct me if I'm wrong, was that established by Governor Bush at the time or Governor Kearse?
At that time, we had one during Governor Bush's administration, and I chaired another one under Governor Kearse.
So under two different administrations. And
correct.
Your community was entertaining complaints at the time from citizens all over the state regarding their condominiums. And one day I'm in my office, and a process server knocks on the door, and I accept the summons thinking that, you know, one of my clients that I represent just got sued, probably in a typical foreclosure case. Well, I looked down at the summons, and to my surprise, it wasn't a summons at all. It was a subpoena from the Florida House of Representatives signed by you demanding that a boatload of records from a condominium association in Aventura and demanding that a member, at least, of the board of directors of this Aventura condo actually get on a plane and fly up to Tallahassee and testify in person in front of the House of Representatives as to why they failed to turn over copies of these records to unit owners who had requested them. And needless to say, you scared my client half to death. And but Mr. Urbino was kind enough to let the board off the hook after we worked all weekend and got him the records delivered to his office here in Miami. And I, for one, Julio, will always be thankful for that. And I can tell you that Condo and Aventura will be thankful for that as well.
You know, Eric, the client wasn't the one that was crying. You were.
I didn't want to go up and appear in front of the House of Representatives. But that was very interesting. How about telling us a little bit about what that committee was all about?
Well, first of all, like I said, that was a governance. It was a select committee that was basically established by, like I said, two different governors under their administration to basically travel the state of Florida and listen to the complaints that people were giving the legislators about what was wrong with the statute 718, 719, and 720, and the horror stories that they were encountering living in an association environment. And also, at the same time, we were there to listen and document what some of their suggestions were for changes in statute, and it became a very interesting committee. We were also given the subpoena powers, as you mentioned. And I just want to make a note, Eric, the situation, like, for instance, in your client, you know, there was a huge problem in Florida getting access to documents. People for years have been requesting documents from their boards and from their property managers and so forth, and they just, in several cases, could not get anything turned over to them. That's why the subpoena power came in, and we just took up a number of cases that seemed to have had a lot of problems, a lot of complaints. We did subpoena these individuals more not to inconvenience them to come to Tallahassee or to give testimony in front of us, but the intent was to get these documents turned over.
Sure.
And something good came out of that. We actually created a piece of legislation that said that now, after requesting documents that with a certified return receipt piece of correspondence, but if you do it twice, now we gave DBPR the subpoena power to be able to get documents if after two times with a certified return receipt request they still haven't turned over the documents. And it was never to scare a client. It was just to make these board members understand,
of course,
these are public records and they need to turn them over. And in your case and in many other cases, a lot of people complied, finally turned over the documents, and a lot of those ended up being looked into in other investigations. But your client was very helpful, and so were you, and we're thankful. We wish all of them would have been that easy.
Absolutely. And hey, it's a complaint that we hear about routinely on the show, people calling in and saying, despite their requests, you know, sometimes they just have difficulty getting access to records. So if an association is not going to turn over records, then fine, turn it over to the House of Representatives if that's how you want to play it. But let's do this. Let's go to our first break, and when we get back, Let's talk about how you feel about the current state of our condo and HOA problems facing our communities, maybe some ways you'd like to see it get fixed. Of course, what your platform is all about and why you want a seat on the county commission. And if any of our callers have any questions for Julio or for Scott and I, give us a call right here in the studio, 877-850-8585. Again, that's 877-850-8585. You have a real unique opportunity today to ask a legislator how the process works and any and all questions you can think of about condo or HOA law. You have the right guy on the line. Julio, I, for one, always thought that you got it, and your proposals for legislation were always smart, well thought out, well planned, and we will be back right after this.
Why can't we be friends? Why can't we be friends? Why can't we be friends? Why can't we be friends?
Welcome back to Condo Craze and HOAs here on 850 WFTL again. I'm Karen Curtis with attorneys Eric Glazer and Scott Shapiro. We're taking your phone calls at 877-850-8585, 877-850-8585. We have Julio Rubino with us on the show, formerly with the Florida House of Representatives, now running for Miami-Dade County Commission, and again, taking your calls as well. Thanks for being on the show, Julio.
Thank you.
Hey, Julio, instead of me telling everybody how great you are about all your accomplishments, what do you want the listeners to know most about yourself?
Well, that they do have some good public servants that like to pass good public policy to try to help people in Florida. And in this case, it's funny because now here we are in a campaign for local, what I call county government. And I'm finding out as we go around in the campaign trail, I have hundreds and hundreds of condominiums in my district. It's an area called Brickell. Sure you all have heard of it.
Absolutely.
And the problems are still there. A lot of it has gotten better, but they're actually looking forward to having a county commissioner with a background in condominium reform legislation and the need of being able to reach out for not only county issues, but also issues that affect their everyday lives.
Sure. Well, ironically, the Florida legislative session ended less than 48 hours ago, basically. And one of the most controversial pieces of the new legislation that emerged from the session was really almost a complete deregulation of future land use, and now it's become a lot easier for developers to build in Florida, you know, even more of those big high-rises that we see on Brickell, without having to worry about the impact of what they build on the community. Now, you know, most of the Republicans, of course, think that's a great idea for future development of the state, but the environmentalists are claiming that it's a disaster, actually. So what's your take on it?
You know, the first thing is, you know, your intro song in there, Why Can't We Be Friends?
Sure.
That should have been played on the Florida House and Senate floors this past week, because what a mess it was. But
it got real messy in the end. Yeah, lots of fighting in the end.
It was interesting to watch, and I got to tell you, I think it's one of the most battling-type sessions I've seen, with a lot of bad legislation. Not only this, but, you know, and I know for another date you may want to talk about these new insurance ideas that came out. They may raise the commercial insurances on these condominiums, unlimited amount of money. So let me go into your question. I think there needs to be a balance. I think what was done was probably going to be very, very detrimental to Florida. I will tell you that there are some needs for being able that in the right locations you can have what you call controlled development, but they basically wanted to give up, they want to create a free-for-all, which reminds me of talking about deregulation. There was a bill that I helped defeat this year that would have basically deregulated CAMs in general.
Right,
it was
exactly.
A big deregulation bill. So for those listening, you know, you may want to elaborate on that. They were thinking about allowing anybody to get a CAM license and just go out there and do what they want to do.
Right.
I thought that was a travesty, but I'm glad that we were able to stop that from happening.
Yeah, that died along with completely removing the DBPR, of, you know, the Division of Condominiums, Right.
You know, and we're pro trying to do things to try to move the economy, to create businesses. I think the intent was, or it was hidden under, let's do what we can to create more businesses in South Florida. But deregulation of whether it has to do with future land uses or, you know, deregulating CAMs or that part of the commercial insurance that was deregulated, that goes, in my opinion, against the consumers of Florida. That's why I keep telling people, keep watching what happens in those 60 days in Tallahassee. It's over. But now we'll have to deal with the repercussions of it for quite a long time.
Hey, Julio, we have a call from John in Miami that has a question for you. You there, John?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, you got a question for Mr. Rubino?
Yeah, Mr. Rubino, first of all, I'd like to really appreciate you as unfortunately, you were the strongest advocate I've ever heard, seen in my life, representing homeowners, both in condominium associations and homeowner associations, that you were very upfront and very capable of establishing most of the major changes I saw in HOA reform in the legislature. I think we lost a strong supporter when you lost the race. Now, in that respect, since you were the sponsor of one of the legislative statutes, the sections that changed a couple of years back, specifically 7203035, which is the architectural control statute, let me give you a notation. My understanding of the statute, the way I understand it, is that first of the governing documents, as far as I notice, are composed of, in the case of an HOA, the covenants, the articles of incorporation, the bylaws, which were all registered documents in the county courthouse. Now, what they call the architectural control manual is not a registered document, and that's supposed to be used to enforce the covenants. What happens, and I think your intent of 720 was to redefine that the architectural control manual can only be used to enforce what's already in the covenants. But unfortunately, basically in our association, the board of directors through the architectural have added unsurmountable other conditions in the architectural control manual that were never in the original documents. What is your general, legislative intent of 7-0, because everything I've heard is it's a very strong law, but unfortunately, until it goes to a lawsuit and tried and resolved in a court of law, a final definition won't be made. So, what is your general opinion or legislative intent for 7203035?
It's an excellent question, and that's probably one of the reasons why we wanted to do more reform in 720. We, as you know, the regulatory arm of state government, DBPR, has very nothing at all to do with HOAs, and that's why most of these things end up with a legal interpretation. It's going to end up in a courtroom.
And we'll talk about a very interesting case that wound up in a courtroom last month, but we got to go to our half-hour break. And guys, call in with your questions for Julio Urbina, 877-850-8585. We'll be back right after this.
Welcome back to Condo Craze and HOAs here on 850 WFTL. Again, we are taking your phone calls. I'm Karen Curtis with Eric Glazer and Scott Shapiro, attorneys from Glazer & Associates. The number to call is 877-850-8585, 877-850-8585. And we have our guest, Julio Urbina, on the show. So thanks for calling in.
All right, Julio, welcome back. John, the statute that he was referring to, the 720 statute, basically was the statute that basically put a limit now on what an architectural review committee can basically do in an HOA. And the statute was basically saying that if an owner has certain rights under their Declaration of Covenants, the architectural review committee can't take them away. They're basically kind of bound by what the governing documents actually say. And if they go too far and violate that, then the HOA can be subject to damages.
Absolutely. And the other thing on it is when anybody wants to challenge anything like that, unfortunately, there is not a regulatory arm of government. And those cases, as you guys know, will end up in courtroom being fought at a civil level. So let me just tell you that we began reform, but there's still a lot to do when it comes to HOAs, timeshares, and co-ops. Condos have always gotten the bulk of the attention, but there's a lot of work to be done. And unfortunately, the big battle, and I'll leave it here, was whether there should be additional regulating of HOAs in Florida. And I think the numbers were there, but the political will in Tallahassee was not there.
And it's horrible because we get calls on the show all the time complaining. Let's just take one example about the archaic way of electing board members in an HOA. I mean, one thing that the condominium statute has over the HOA statute is the election system that's used in a condo really isn't bad. It's pretty much a fair system, and it limits fraud and abuse. And I can tell you there was a legislative proposal, at least, that came up early in the session that would have allowed HOAs to mirror the condo statute when it came to voting. And for some reason that died, and I can tell you it's going to make a lot of our listeners real unhappy. Why is there such a fight on the HOA end to have basically any regulation at all?
Well, you got to remember, you got a lot of interest in there. You do have different law firms representing clients. You have the associations, actually people that represent the CAMs in Florida. These are the managers. You have a lot of other interests in there that have to do with the people that even sell insurance. I mean, people have no idea how many lobbyists are there in Tallahassee for the 60-day session looking into everything and anything that has to do with association living. So
I
if you think
it,
that changing other laws are easy, this is just as complicated as anything else in Florida.
I'm guessing there's more lobbyists than there are legislators themselves.
There is. At times there really is, and that's the sad part about it, Eric.
Well, we keep talking on the show, at least the last few weeks, or a topic actually that comes up all the time, is the horrible unemployment numbers that we have in Miami-Dade County. And again, you want to run for a county commission seat now, again, in a county that has an unemployment problem, to say the least, even worse perhaps than Detroit, Michigan. And I guess the question is this. We've said on the show many times that certainly one way of creating jobs down here would be finally to admit that maybe we need some full-scale casino gambling, and that it's kind of crazy that the Indian community basically has a monopoly on the right to have real casinos. Would you be in favor of some sort of expanded gambling here in South Florida?
100%. And you know that I sat on the Select Committee on the Indian Compact, and I was one that was really opposed to giving a monopoly to anybody, being the tribes in this case, and I think it's time for expansion. Listen, I wasn't elected to preach morality to people. I don't gamble. I will never spend a penny. But you know, it's something that people enjoy. There's an opportunity for Florida. I'm over here in areas of South Beach. Can you imagine my South Beach hotels with gaming? We would do very well. And let's talk about jobs. We're talking about creating jobs. These are not minimum wage jobs. These are jobs that are paying really nice dollars, and besides that come with benefits. And again, it's not for me to preach what people should or should not do. At least minimum, put it up to the voter. So I think that what we did by giving monopolies to the tribes was a disservice to Floridians and probably cut down on the opportunity to bring more jobs to Florida.
I'm with you 1,000% on that. There's a bunch of things that I really don't understand about our current way of having casinos down here. For some reason, the legislature thinks that it's not evil to allow somebody to pour their paycheck into a slot machine for now they have like $20 a pull on a slot machine. Somehow that's not evil. But a crap table or a roulette table for $5 is somehow, you know, that's immoral. I don't get it. I just don't understand how it works down here. Makes no sense. And respectfully, I think there needs to be a host of changes when it comes to the way gambling is regulated down here, because it just doesn't make sense.
Well, I got to agree with that. And you notice that the Republican legislature a couple years ago were not warming up to the idea at all. Now, all of a sudden, you have senators that are fiscal conservatives, and they're actually proposing, what I call expansions. They don't want to call it that because they probably get hit politically.
Right, exactly.
In their areas, but it is an expansion of gaming to allow these bigger casinos to maybe come into Florida, and why not? Let's give it a chance. We know a lot of downtown areas in many counties around Florida that can benefit from that, and that's my opinion where I see the legislature going in the next couple of years.
Of course, especially in the winter months. I'm telling you, if we had real casino gambling down here, we knock out Atlantic City to a large extent, and we knock out even Vegas, believe it or not, because
100%.
During the winter months, we got the ocean and we got the weather. People would be coming here in droves. And it would be a nice companion to our wonderful ports that we have in Miami as well. People may fly in a few days early before they get on that cruise, or come off the cruise and stay a few days later.
And we benefit. Remember, those are dollars into the community. Those are tax dollars. And that is also jobs.
Well,
jobs.
Absolutely.
Preaching about it. There's your opportunity right there.
Well, I, for one, am glad to hear that you're in favor about it. But I want to move on to another real hot topic. And we've been talking on the show for the last few weeks about a ruling by the Florida Supreme Court in the Cohn versus Grant case. And if you remember, you were actually one of the legislators who voted in favor of amending the law to make sure that residents who live in a mixed-use community, that they get to elect a majority of the board if they outnumber the commercial unit owners. And how do you feel about the Florida Supreme Court now stating that the law was unconstitutional and that condo laws that the legislature passes don't apply to any condominiums that don't have language in their declaration that automatically adopts these future legislative changes?
Well, let me just call it that we have a name for this in Tallahassee. It's called judicial legislating. And apparently, you know, the judicial branch doesn't understand well the different branches and whose responsibility is what. I'm totally in disagreement with them, and that's why you saw a bill this year trying to basically tear up the way that the Florida Supreme Court handles cases.
Right, yeah.
And this is a clear example of where they're, in my opinion, overstepping their bounds. My job is... We are the elected body that listens to people and designate these type of laws, only to have a group, and I'm not trying to be disrespectful to our Supreme Court justices. We know them all. We think they're highly capable, but I think at times they overstep their responsibility, per se, and I think that what we were doing here is basically protecting people that live in condominiums when it came to this Condo Act. I think the big thing here was the retroactivity.
Right.
Of a piece of legislation that became, I think, the key in their decision. But again, clearly, judicial legislating, they need to keep their nose out of our business and our and us out of their business.
Well, as you know, I teach that board certification course to condo board members each month at the Hard Rock Hotel, and I had the pleasure, actually, of having former House member Elaine Bloom in attendance last week, and I got to tell you, she had no qualms about saying that she was outraged at the decision, and she thinks it's wrong for the legislature to kind of lose control over condominiums because a sentence or two is missing from the declaration. But how do you feel about officers and directors of condo associations mandatorily having to attend a certification course so they can learn a thing or two about the law before being put in charge of condo associations, some with budgets in excess of seven figures?
I'm totally in favor. As you know, I was one of the champions in trying to create at least some type of certification in doing this, and it's simple. I want everyone to listen to what I'm about to say. It wasn't about putting any more mandates or any more responsibilities on volunteer board members. This was about making sure that board members knew what they were doing, because they have a fiscal responsibility. This isn't like joining your local bridge club. This is about, you know, probably handling buildings with millions of dollars of budgets, and more importantly, you can be sued. This is the board of directors. This is the corporation. And what happened when you had God love our volunteers, you know, on these boards that didn't know what the heck they were doing, a lot of times the ones running the show were the property managers or in respect to attorneys.
Yep.
Sometimes the attorneys were telling them what to do. And I think that it behooves us to have people that know what they're doing, understand, you know, the statutes, understand what bylaws are like, and what their responsibilities are, and also Robert's Rules of Orders on how they conduct these meetings. So that was the intent. It's great, and I wish we could do even more to try to make sure that when you're elected, you definitely will go through a certification like the courses you guys are offering or something similar so that you understand what you're doing and you're not being led by other people.
Sure. I got to tell you, the feedback that we've gotten from it has really been incredible.
It's good.
At first, yeah, a lot of board members say that they can't believe that they're forced to do something like this, and then they wind up taking the course. And they're actually thankful and very much appreciative of the fact that they had to come and learn something. And, you know,
Absolutely. At
least those are the good board members. And we've even had a lot of attendees who are officers and directors of HOAs. And they can't believe that it's not mandatory for an HOA.
Well, I want you to know that was a battle to get that done. I fought for 3 years just to get something like that. So, again, going back to your earlier question, you know, the interest in Tallahassee, explain to me why these different interests would not want their board members to be educated or understanding in their responsibilities. I only got one answer for that.
Which is?
That maybe they were benefiting from board members that didn't know what they were doing.
Well, I guess certainly the lack of education on behalf of board members would no doubt result in increased litigation. No question about that.
Absolutely.
But why don't we do this? We're going to take our last and final break. We're taking your calls from Mr. Rabine at 877-850-8585, and we will be back right after this.
Welcome back to the final segment of Condo Craze and HOAs here on 850 WFTL. Again, I'm Karen Curtis with attorneys Eric Glazer and Scott Shapiro from Glazer & Associates. And we are taking your phone calls for Julio Urbina. The number is 877-850-8585, 877-850-8585.
Julio, before the break, we were talking about the fact that there just is too many special interests in Tallahassee that are stirring the pot. And I know we spoke about this before on the show, but last year you were actually trying to get the banks to pay more money when they foreclose on a home and take back title to a unit. Instead, the legislature passed what I thought was basically a meaningless law, and they raised the bank's liability to the lesser of 12 months of assessments or 1% of the mortgage, instead of raising that cap to 2% that I know you desperately wanted. Why did you run into so much opposition when trying to get the banks to pay more money to the condos?
Well, it's called the banking industry, a very strong lobbying core that didn't want it, and they controlled the legislature. There's two groups of lobbyists that control the legislature. Number one is the insurance industry because of the large sums of money in the banking industry. And I tell you that I'm still fighting them nowadays in the private sector for the simple reason that you know that they're the only people entitled to that 1% or 12 months, which was nonsense what was done. It really didn't, you know, help the unit owners at all or the boards. A lot of secondary lenders that were not the primary lenders are trying to attach themselves to that particular legislation, saying that they're only responsible for the 1% or 12 months. But you know very well, gentlemen, when they're a secondary lender, they bought, let's say, the loan from somebody else. They're not entitled to that. They have to pay their fair share.
And there you go, right. Right.
And we want to make sure that people understand that. I mean, these laws are so intricate, but the simple answer to your questions, I think it's unfair what they do to the unit owners and leaves everyone else on the hook having to pay for, in times, or deadbeat unit owners that are not paying, or people that may have legitimately had some financial issues and are not making payment. And the number of foreclosures, I don't need to tell you how bad they are in probably every condominium around the state of Florida. But that's going to be a battle that will continue.
Absolutely.
To take on the banking industry.
Well,
it's going to be a very tough battle.
Let me ask you a real important question. How do we stop the corruption in government in Miami-Dade County and Broward and Palm Beach that has really been so rampant over the last 4 years? And I'm sure you'd agree, it's embarrassing. Time magazine, and if I remember correctly, a politician from Colorado a few years ago, once labeled Miami a third world country because of all this corruption, you know, you're really walking into the hornet's nest. You know, what do we do to stop all of this?
Well, I'm going to tell you something. This may sound like a political paid announcement. The first thing is elect people like myself to office, to be in the county commission. I think you guys understand my nonsense way of being and trying to go in there and wanting to expose what goes on. I've made it very clear to people that I don't want a long-term career in county government. I want to get in there, not only make government smaller and impose term limits and cut down the size of this county government, but I also want to create a number of investigations, like you know people do when a new board gets in, or when there's the potential that there were things that never came into light. I think that's what I would like to do, and I think it's what the county needs to do, because I know there's going to be some overwhelming changes. I think there needs to be forensic audits into the budget and to what have been some of the actions of the elected body. So there's a lot to do to completely reform Miami-Dade County's government. And last but not least, I mean, there's other problems in here that have to do with Jackson Memorial Hospital,
right.
Another embarrassment to Miami-Dade County, and the politics in there where we need to remove the county from county commissioners out of the political side of that particular state hospital. So the work will be incredible. And why do people like myself get in? It's because we're tired, Eric, of seeing the nonsense that goes on. And again, they talk about special interest controlling stuff in Tallahassee. Special interest in Miami-Dade County government, local government, is probably worse at times than it is at the state level.
Right.
So it's time to get some good people in.
Well, make no mistake, what's going on in terms of the politics in Miami-Dade County is so interesting. It's being watched all around the country in terms of all, you know, the recall votes and things of that nature. Very, very interesting. Now, your opponent in the race for Miami-Dade County Commission seat is the former mayor, Xavier Suarez. Tell us why you're a better choice.
Absolutely. Well, look at that. You want to talk about the fraud and corruption in government. My opponent, the former mayor, is the only mayor ever removed from the city of Miami, as mayor of after only serving 111 days for corruption, for absentee ballot corruption. The man has been antagonistic with people, knocking at people's constituents' doors at late at night and threatening them. I mean, this is the kind of nonsense that we do not want any more of in Miami-Dade County. And, you know, it's creating power struggles. He's got a son who's a commissioner in Miami. He wants to be now a commissioner in county government. You talk about conflicts of interest. But then again, people that have had that type of past where you've been removed and almost had to negotiate yourself out of being hit with a felony so that he could not, he would not have been able to practice law, and they come back quietly 10 years later wanting to seek office. That's one of the biggest problems that we have in Miami-Dade County, that people forget who these people are, and, you know, we kept reelecting them. There's a saying, we have what we deserve because of voter apathy and voters not taking the time to find out who the candidates are. Mm-hmm.
Well, if our listeners wanted to learn more about your campaign and find out, hey, how they can help you specifically, where should they look? Give us your website address, phone numbers. How can we help out, Julio?
Well, it's very simple. You know, I'm a Facebook fanatic, so there's Julio Robina for Miami-Dade County Commission District 7. There's also a website, Julio Robina for Miami-Dade County Commission District 7. And I like to give my cell number out. I know a lot of people think it's crazy, but half of Miami has my number anyway. And that number is 305-343-0776. That cell number's been around for 10 years. Feel free to call me. You know, I love being hands-on and hope to be able to continue to serve at the county level as a commissioner and help, at the same time, all of those that have association problems in Miami-Dade County.
Hey, thank you so much for being a friend of the show, and I certainly speak for everyone here at the station, when, at least on our show, when we wish you the very best of luck. Everybody,
thank you very much.
Have a happy and healthy Mother's Day to all the mothers that are listening out
thank
there.
Thank you.
And again, Julio, good luck, and we look forward to being with everybody again next week here on Condo Craze and HOAs.